What's up, y'all? I'm your host, Jeremiah Mitchell, and you're listening to the Chain Reaction Podcast. I'm joined today by Mr. Jeremiah Harding. How are you doing, sir? Good to see you. Your profile shot. Now I know what the full mugshot looks like for you.
Right? Yeah.
Just a big hairy mess both ways.
Yeah, basically. We're doing a little bit of painting this week at the place where I live, so there's going to be some physical changes in both this and the vlog. But, you know, I'm still fundamentally talking at a camera, so it's still going to basically sound and look the same, but it's going to be a little bit closer up. So, but how are you?
Doing pretty well. Yeah, a decent week. Yeah, nothing exciting, though. Not really. How are you?
Well, the whole thing, like, all work and no play makes Jack suicidal. Well,
I haven't heard that one, but...
Oh, well, that's my variation on it, but it's basically the same
okay.
thing. I had like a day off for the first time in a while. and so I used that to hang with my workout partner, and we played a bunch of expeditions on Lara Croft, but we also did a bunch of knife practice drills up and down this mountain. So that was very good and relaxing. We did some knife drills and some Tai Chi. It was a good time.
On a mountain?
Yeah. Because the thing is, like, if you listen to Paul Ingram of the Cali Center,
nope.
one of the things he emphasizes, Cali is a stick-based martial art that also teaches you, like, it teaches you three different ranges. Basically, like, do you know anything about boxing?
Yeah, that involves using your fists.
Right. Okay. So like you've got your jab range, right? You've got your kick range, which I'm not going to demonstrate because my camera's in front of my foot.
Please do. Please.
And you've got your clinch range, right?
Okay.
And then like it's sort of the same three ranges, only with a stick in your hand. You've got stick range to defang a snake, stick range to strike their face, and stick range to perform direct guntings, which are like destructions and disarms. So basically, like Paul Ingram of the Cali Center, he says you should train every day, and you should try to train on as many different types of terrain as possible. So whenever I get the chance, I go up with my workout partner, and we go and train on this mountain.
That sounds fun. Yeah, that saying, I have actually found the opposite to be more true than the saying itself, the all work and no play makes Jack suicidal, which is a variation of it. But for me, all play and no work makes me want to kill myself. Mm-hmm. Not quite, but there's something about like having all that free time without responsibility that's like, what am I doing? Or the lack of productivity, I guess.
Right.
Sometimes play can be productive.
I think it could be either. Like, because if you're not being productive, your life doesn't have a purpose, and you wonder what you're here for. But if you are being productive, but you're being too productive, and you don't have any time to enjoy what you produce, then it's. I think that there's like a middle ground somewhere that I'm very bad at achieving.
Yeah. The an important part for me is finding a routine of life that involves all of those things, you know, in an integrated sort of fashion. The productivity, the money, which is sometimes different from the productivity and actually getting things done, as well as the having fun alone and having fun in a social setting. For me, having fun by myself is actually a really important part of my mental well-being. I don't know. It seems to be at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shit, I was going to say something, and it's... Oh, I remember. Okay, so I was looking at the podcast episodes. This is for the audio-only listeners, who are the majority, and I saw that episode 42, there was like a 20th of, or like a 15th, I guess, of the normal listens, and I believe that is because when I first posted it, I made the mistake of not putting it in its proper category, so it didn't get into the feed until later. So in case you are listening on the audio and you're like, oh, I might have missed an episode, or you might 42 might have came into your feed a couple of weeks later, and it would be not at the top of your list. So anyway, it was on Thanksgiving and feudalism, I believe, and I remember that enjoying that discussion and thinking that it was interesting. So anyway, if there's a very, very good chance you haven't listened to 42 yet, and if not, you feel like listening to more of us, I would recommend checking that one out. All right. Let's jump right into the Hawaii thing. It's January 14th, 2018, and yesterday, the day before, there was a fake missile incoming alert for the landmass of Hawaii. Harding, you want to give any more details on that or
talk about that? Yeah. So it was just a false alert, and it said this is not a drill. So that made the false alert seem really, really potent. And so it freaked Hawaii out, and then because of that, it freaked pretty much the world out, because, you know, mutually assured destruction. If one bomb is dropped, if one missile is launched, basically we're all fucked. But nobody saw anything launched from anywhere. But basically, like, there wasn't a panic in the military. There was just a panic in the civilian populace, while everybody tweeted in very all caps letters that there hadn't actually been a missile launched. the military was totally like level headed, except that it was embarrassed that its missile alert system fucking failed to be accurate. You know, I think this was actually the first time this has ever happened too. So it really
I've never heard. Yeah, I think we definitely would have heard of it. I mean, we've never had an alert system like we have, you know, over the last decade with
right.
the cell phones in everyone's pocket. So it makes sense that it hasn't happened before.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of funny because it really highlights the issue with modern mass communication in a very specific way. It says like, oh, well, you know, we can say this thing and immediately a shit ton of people will believe it.
Yeah, the instantaneous nature of the communication. The really nice part about a print-only world is that it takes a long time for information to dispense, and it takes a long time to produce that information, which means people are more inclined to figure out or make sure it's more truthful. Not necessarily, but you know, usually inclined to research it a little better. And if it's found that the information is false, it hasn't reached as many people as quickly. Instant communication
right.
can be incredibly manipulative in mass, as we saw.
And of course, no proof is required. And that's a flaw with both print and this mass media. But mass media...
And humans, yeah.
But like mass media now, everybody can just jump on the bandwagon anyway. And it's really fucking profitable for these mass media organizations, even the ones that used to be, you know, reputable press. Fucking, it's really profitable for them to jump onto that bandwagon and say, yeah, that guy fucked that person and she didn't want it. And like, so.
Yeah. Or you don't even need to explain what happened. You just go hashtag me too. And
right.
all of a sudden you're a part of this big movement. And I don't want to, it's awesome how many people are coming out now about their molestations that are, you know, that even ones that happened 20 years ago, like that's great. Like I've had a lot of friends who were molested as kids, and it's tough. It's tough to, they have a big struggle coming out with that. But then there's these, so many people that engaged in what they describe as, or what when you read their descriptions are completely consensual interactions between adults, and go hashtag me too. because there was, you know, some sort of, yeah, because they regretted it later, or, you know, there was some sort of perceived power differential it's really just like a money or position differential. That's not really power over you if your actions are completely consensual. It's just you not taking responsibility for your own choices.
Well, right. So there's three things. First, like,
oh man, now we got on this. All right, go for it. Go for it real quick.
Yeah, I'll make this fast. Right. First off, Anybody who wants to see my full opinion on this can check out my new vlog that I'm doing. I'm doing a daily vlog on DTube, and then doing I'm posting it. Well, I will be. I haven't been doing that yet, but I will be posting it to Minds and YouTube the next day. But I don't like YouTube. YouTube fucking sucks because of their demonetization and very strict political policies.
We'd be millionaires by now if it wasn't for YouTube demonetization.
Exactly, right?
It's very frustrating.
But so if that's the first thing, if you want to see my full view on this, at least the one that I've put out already, because I have so much more that I could say, check out my vlog. I'll send the other Jeremiah a link to it.
Yeah, send a Twitter chat. I will put it up with this episode, episode 46.
But basically, I disagree wholly with the Me Too movement, because that's the second point. It's not just people. It's specifically women. It's specifically women who are coming out.
Terry Crews.
Yeah, but he was just groped, and he's one example out of like so many.
Okay.
It's not he was taken into a back room.
It's interesting. No, certainly not as bad as a lot of these other stories. But that's sexual assault.
It is.
Right? Yeah. I mean, like, that's...
But beyond that, it's like sexual assault that the other person might have even done in fun. They might have thought it was funny. And, you know, I can see that. There's lots...
Yeah. I'm kind of doubtful about that. Like, it's different if you're interacting, if you're, you know, at a frat party with your boys, you know, and you guys do weird dick things because you are engaging in aggressive behavior. You haven't become an adult yet. But not, in that situation, does not seem like, oh, this is a joke. And even if it was, like, if you jokingly sexually assault someone, it's still pretty disgusting.
It's a mistake. Yeah, definitely. It's not something you should do ever again after you realize how awful it made the other person feel. But, like it's mostly women. But you listed one example. The only other example of a Me Too that's male is also against a male. It's always against a male, and it's only occasionally a male reporting.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, like, I'm sure there are plenty of very similar, and I'm just pulling my cell phone out of my pocket here because it's annoying. I'm sure that there are many cases of females doing the same or similar things to men. And if a man came out and said, you know, she made me uncomfortable, she sexually assaulted me, or something similar to that, you know what they would be called? A fucking pussy. So, I mean, realistically, I just want to see proof for these things before people believe them. But even if that's not the case, I want to see women get fucked up too, because I'm sure there are plenty of women that, like,
that's funny phrasing. Been...
Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
sure.
No, it's fine. I'm not criticizing.
But their careers. I want to see their careers end in the same way that all these other men have had their careers end, because basically, I don't think that this is just a powerful men versus innocent women, or a powerful men versus Terry Crews and that one boy. I don't think that this is a men versus everyone issue, and I'm an anti-feminist, so I'm sort of disgusted when I hear about a men versus everything. I know that the only...
You're cutting out, man. Why don't you reconnect quick?
What?
You're cutting out. Why don't you reconnect quick? See if we can get you back in here, and I'm gonna start transitioning over to you. One thing I realized we didn't discuss on the show at all, the new Republican tax plan. And I'm not going to go into details about that or anything like that. Getting into the nitty gritty of, okay, we're good now, of laws is generally not something I'm all that interested, especially since they wouldn't exist. I mean, a part of that sounds appealing. Like, I've thought multiple times since before becoming an anarchist, even about trying to become a lawyer and engage in seeking justice in that way. But it does seem like pissing into the wind a little bit in the modern climate. The idea of fighting the state in court sounds kind of nice, but yeah, it's it's all just kind of just a waste of space on paper, most of their laws, which they don't care about following anyway. But I wanted to talk a little bit about it because I feel like the natural libertarian position is taxation is theft, therefore decreasing the amount of theft for 92% of the population, which I believe is the guess, the estimate, is a generally good thing. And I don't think most of the other 8% are seeing raises. They're just paying similar. Only a handful are seeing raises, which sucks to be them, to have increase in their theft. But one thing that is often ignored is that the real problem for long-term economic growth and the real problem of state power and state violence and state appropriation of the wealth of its citizens isn't necessarily taxation. It's really a spending issue that is the ultimate problem. Because if you cut taxes, so they cut taxes, a lot of people are going to be paying fewer taxes. I'm going to be paying fewer taxes. I'm happy with that aspect of it. And taxation is murder back theft. So you do decrease the amount of evil in the world by eliminating some levels of taxation. So that's nice and all. But spending is going up, and I believe there's going to be something like a $1.2 trillion deficit or some bullshit like that, which is ultimately the issue, because the state doesn't get money to pay that deficit voluntarily. If it's not getting it through taxation, it's either getting it through printing it, which steals money, or doesn't steal money, devalues the wealth that people already have, especially the wealth of the working class, the poor, what little they have, and really anyone that isn't involved in getting low interest rate loans or involved in the banking system directly. Most everyone else is going to be hurt by the decrease in the value of their dollar, which makes everything more expensive and affects wages as one of the last things it impacts because of the way money flows through the economy. So it's either through inflation that they are paying for this, or it is through borrowing, which means in their borrowing, using the future productivity of children and people who aren't even born yet as collateral. Like they're not mortgaging their house like I might have to do to borrow something. They're mortgaging the productivity that they can steal from people who don't even exist yet, from the most helpless, the weakest in society. So cutting taxes is good on one hand, but if it's not in conjunction with a decrease in state spending, it still has a deleterious impact upon the poor and upon the economy, and anyone who is laboring, really, who is someone who is bringing productivity to society and not a parasite. Harding, you wanna say anything on that? I've been going bit.
Okay, so taxation is theft, right? Government is murder. Government is a gang of thieves and criminals, and right, but reducing taxes is almost always a blindfold to the other sorts of corruption that go on. Realistically speaking, people are so focused on the tax plan or net neutrality or shitholes that they don't pay attention to the shit that goes on in the background. There's this article on the Free Thought Project, and I'm going to read some of it while I look to the side because my PC is over there. Just this week, though, guys, keep that in mind. As no one watched, Trump pardoned 5 megabanks for corruption charges, who he owes millions. Trump followed in the footsteps of Obama and pardoned 5 megabanks. And pardoned 5 megabanks, one of which he reportedly owes up to $300 million to in outstanding loans. So While Americans celebrated the holidays, President Trump followed in the footsteps of his predecessors by acting in the interest of Wall Street and using the distraction to do something that was not in the best interest of the American people. He pardoned 5 megabanks for rampant fraud and corruption, which is especially notable because of the amount of money he owes them. Trump has been using Deutsche Bank since the 1990s, and Financial Times reported that he now owes the bank at least $130 million in outstanding loans secured in properties in Miami, Chicago, and Washington. However, a source told the Times that the actual number is likely much larger at $300 million. Reports claim that the Deutsche was the only bank willing to lend Trump money after his companies faced multiple bankruptcies. The relationship has continued over the years, and an analysis from the Wall Street Journal claimed that Trump has received at least $2.5 billion in loans from Deutsche Bank over the last 20 years. There have been concerns about Trump's ties to the bank becoming a conflict of interest dating back to the 2016 election, and the evidence to support those concerns is now becoming clear. During the week of Christmas, the Federal Register announced that the Trump administration had issued waivers to Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, Barclays, UBS, and Deutsche Bank, all mega banks facing charges of fraud and corruption. The banks were involved in the LIBOR scandal, in which they colluded to deliberately depress the rate at which they paid out on investments. By suppressing the London Interbank Offered Rate, LIBOR, at the beginning of an economic crisis in 2007, the megabanks were able to boost their earnings and to give their customers a false sense of security. Deutsche Bank pled guilty to wire fraud in a U.S. court in 2015, and it went on to pay $3.5 billion for its role in the LIBOR scandal, more than any other bank involved, before it reached a $7.2 billion settlement with the Justice Department in early 2017. Then, in June 2017, Deutsche Bank trader David Liu, who is based in Singapore, pled guilty to conspiring to spoof gold, silver, platinum, and palladium futures in the federal court in Chicago, confirming that the biggest banks in the world have conspired to rig precious metals markets. While Trump granted 5-year exemptions to Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, and Barclays, and 3-year exemption to UBS and Deutsche Bank, it should be noted that his administration is not the only one to have done this. As IBT noted, in late 2016, the Obama administration extended temporary 1-year waivers to 5 banks, which just happened to be the same ones Trump has now extended the exemptions on, revealing the real rulers in D.C. Not surprisingly, the latest decision to pardon the banks comes in stark contrast to one of Trump's most applauded campaign promises, that he would finally stand up against Wall Street and demand that the most powerful banks be held accountable to the public. I'm not going to let Wall Street get away with murder. Wall Street has caused tremendous problems for us. We're going to tax Wall Street, Trump said during a campaign rally in January 2016. So really, this whole thing is just a way to say essentially, yeah, maybe we didn't raise.
You're cutting out again, but you're about to make a pretty good point. I think the tax plan, there are things about it that are good, and it will have some positive economic impacts. But let's not pretend that either Congress or Trump or any of the rulers in D.C., except for maybe, you know, 2 or 3 congressmen who maybe are sincerely ideologically for small government. Let's not pretend they're doing this for any other reason than potential and hoped for future political gain. And maybe, you know, maybe indeed as a distraction, to get stuff like that in the background. Although honestly, it seems like stuff like that stays in the background regardless of what's going on. It doesn't matter if that distraction has something to do with the Kardashians or if it's a net neutrality tax cut thing. There's always something else to discuss other than the deep state, really deep state of various sorts. The people behind the scenes, the political class that aren't technically politicians who have far more impact in running things than perhaps all the voters combined, it seems like. There's always something different to discuss other than them. And I think that might be partially because it sucks to talk about things like that when it feels like there's nothing you can do to change it. I think there's a sense of hopelessness attached to the super wealthy elite running things. Many people, I don't know if it's most, but a huge, huge percentage of people, far more than our libertarians, understand that it's not the politicians that are actually running things. Like, they have a deep sense that the vote doesn't matter that much, and these people are all bought off, and it's the people who are buying them off who are also a big issue. But they know they can't do anything about it, so they put their hope in voting for another politician or arguing over something as really minuscule in terms of the extent of the whole state as net neutrality.
That's why I always tell people to research the Bilderberg Group. Fucking do it, because the organizations and institutions that have seats at the Bilderberg table, they are not your friend. And a lot of these are the institutions that sort of like they've made it very like hard to avoid them, and they've made it very friendly to use them, even though they're very hostile towards you. Walmart is just as responsible as all the major political campaigns for the last several decades. And if you really want to trace things back, a 12 year old did this. She traced back literally all of the president's lineage back to this one king of England. I can't remember what his name was. His first name was John, but his every president has royal blood. Every single one.
John was a reptilian, FYI.
Oh yeah, definitely. but like beyond all that, like Bilderberg, royal bloodlines. The elites are running things in the background. It's not a matter of your politician draining the swamp. Or hoping and changing, or mission accomplishing, or any of that shit. It's a matter of the New World Order. That's the one catchphrase that actually means jack shit, that any politician has used while they were in office. It's the one that matters, because the New World Order is fucking here.
I'm deciding where to go next. Another thing, just on the tax plan and net neutrality, and some of the there has been some deregulation from the executive branch of businesses. One thing that concerns me, and I am less inclined than Harding probably is to see this as a planned thing, other than just something that is convenient, is that when the economy crashes again, and I thought it would be here by sometime in 2017. It wasn't. These things are impossible to predict because, as we know, it's impossible to predict the various decisions made by hundreds of millions of humans making individual choices and interacting voluntarily. But in terms of the conditions are ripe in the market for multiple bubble pops, causing another large 2007, 2008 type economic collapse. And when it does collapse, I believe we're going to be hearing about, and I might be wrong on this, but I believe we're going to be hearing a lot in the mainstream about the way that tax cuts and deregulation caused the economic collapse of 2018, 2019, or whenever it happens. We'll see. But it sucks. Government's always trying to figure out how to blame things on the free market, and a good way to do that is to be able to point to decreases in government and say that this was the cause of the economy, bubbles popping in the market. Even though they will actually have delayed it for a while.
Well, and like I do think that's the plan. I think that they plan shocks, and I think that they plan bubbles and busts. I think that they plan these things so that they can exploit them. Because, like, if fucking Martha Stewart did nothing wrong, she did exactly what every other person who's of any measure of wealth it does. And she did some insider trading. Oh, how scary. When the entire world operates on insider traders controlling the markets and then saying, you know, like creating certain fears, creating certain safety feelings so that people all rush to those in a very specific way that they can monitor and manipulate, especially now that social media has gotten them like basically an algorithmic eye hole into the American psyche. So, and to the psyche of the world, because of the way people use these things and don't like pay attention to the way that they're being used, in a very specific way, the elites can monitor how people react to things and what to do to cause a certain reaction. Trump is a great example of this. He uses a technique called the Overton window, where he tries to like he says the most extreme thing so that the thing he wants will be what happens. The thing he wants is over here, but he says what he wants is over here so that people won't pay attention to what's over here, and people will be fucking glad when this is all that happens. It's a very common tactic, and the elites do this sort of thing too. They will create bubbles, they will create the busts, and then they will buy low and sell high every single time. And it's something that happens like behind people's backs and in front of their faces at the same time. These plans are planned. You know, it's not something that the elites just stumble into. It's something that they created for a very specific purpose, and that is to enrich themselves upon the backs of future generations and the ones that are already here.
Yeah, just in terms of what you're saying, behind your backs and in front of your faces, it's pretty obvious that the number one way that the economy has been controlled over the last 100 years, at least, the regulatory mechanisms maybe are almost outdoing that over the last few decades in terms of the amount of new regulations. But over the last 100 years, it's obvious that it's been the creation of the Federal Reserve, the way that the economy has been controlled by the state. And we talked about it many episodes ago, but you can actually look into the history of the Federal Reserve. You can look into how it was created. You can look into who wrote the foundational law legislation that was passed in 1913, and who tried to justify and sell that legislation to the American people, and what was ultimately the final justification for that legislation. And it was, you have a bunch of bankers get together on Jekyll Island? I want to say hi, yeah. Jekyll Island. Bankers and their representatives, J.P. Morgan Chase, Rothschild, Rockefeller, all the good ones, write a legislation with a particular senator, and basically almost exactly what they wrote with a few minor changes is what passed, and they got the universities, which are state-funded, to come up with all sorts of intellectual justifications why you needed a central bank run by a private company outside of even the incredibly limited accountability of democracy. And then you have World War I as a foundational justification for the ability for giving the state a greater ability to borrow more money so you go fight that war, which was sold on lies.
And what better way to test an inflationary centrally controlled currency than to have a couple fucking world wars?
Right, not many better ways, that's for sure. Figure out how all this thing works, continue to give increased power, and use war as a justification to give increased power to this organization to print money and for the state to spend money and pay it back. I mean, it's a great way for the people who are running this and invested in the Federal Reserve to get quick returns, as if you go to war right away. And already, you know, start this thing, and the state's already borrowing, millions. So you already start with a ton of debt.
Yeah, you make money. You scare people so that their root psychology is very close to the surface, so you can very easily see how to sell this sort of bullshit to the average person. And, like, at the same time, you create the basis for a huge amount of industries that will continue on, even the ones that worked and enriched Hitler, worked for and enriched Hitler. Those institutions would go on, like, to be staples in the average household, even to this day. Fucking VW, IBM, Hugo Boss did the uniforms for the Nazi army, and fucking feminist bitches wear that now. Jesus, it's so easy to see, and people just don't see it because they don't want to. They don't want to think that the thing that's on their table, the thing that they just put their hard-earned labor into, is the thing that's enslaving them.
Yeah, they don't. I think a lot of it has to do with you don't see a way out, and it does feel impossible. And I think there is a way out, and it's a long journey. You know, not just a way out by making your own clothes, because that doesn't really solve the problem. You know, there's a way out through progressive decentralization. You know, potentially cryptocurrency can have a big part of that. You know, and maybe having various localized networks with some people who do make their own clothes or something like that, or provide alternative transportation not provided by one of these giant megacorps. But ultimately, we have to have a medium scale, at least, mental awakening of people who are and have a powerful, with a lot of people, but can be a small minority of people who have had this mental awakening and who are willing to act and even make sacrifices in their lives to get rid of this particular system of oppression and to institute a voluntary system.
We need a global paradigm shift of a huge scale. And we need a shift toward the idea of decentralization.
You're cutting out again, man. I was becoming very, very hopeful that this episode would not involve any voice cutting out, because the connection seemed so good at first. I don't know. You sound just fine, and then all of a sudden, you're out. But you're saying we need a global paradigm shift?
We need a global paradigm shift. And we need a shift toward the appreciation and mass adoption of decentralization, because that's the only way we're ever getting out of this.
Yeah, a lot more various types of peer-to-peer networks for exchange, for purchasing things, for a monetary system. And pretty quick here, we're going to want one. We're going to want these things for an internet. And the more we can do in terms of electricity, water, you know, different systems like that, where you can get these out of the central hub, the closer people will be to escaping the system, and the less people will be and society will be in danger when the system does eventually collapse under its own weight. Because that is inevitable, but when that happens, not quite sure.
Well, when the dollar defaults and they need to have World War III to cover up the fact that they failed on a currency.
Yeah, we'll see. That's the thing about the internet, man. If we can keep this kind of mass communication with people up and somewhat free, at least adequately free, that we can talk to people all over the world, I'm hopeful that the international relationships between large groups of people, you know, many millions of individuals, will help prevent or minimize the damage of a World War III.
Good luck with that. But at the same time, you know, people are so polarized now, and with mass immigration into countries, people already want to fight people on racial lines. So, I mean, the idea the idea that people can kumbaya because of the same internet companies and corporations that have seats at the Bilderberg table doesn't strike me as very likely.
It already happens. You know, there's already a lot more with this global world. There's a lot more unity right. across lines where things were once divided, but across people group lines.
But at what percentage compared to the amount of people that profit off of or that directly benefit from in some other way than profit, the divides? In what percentage, like, it can be very a huge amount more people that are willing to work with each other, but they can still be the minority in comparison to the huge amount of other people, the even huger amount of other people that want things to be the way that they always were with the tribal bullshit. That's why
it definitely can be, but I
paradigm shift.
It definitely can be, but I do think that the free and open communication with people across international boundaries is not necessarily an essential, but a very helpful potential impetus for that global paradigm shift. There's could be. Well, let's get out of here.
All right.
We don't need to talk about shitholes. That's adequately covered.
Yeah, right.
I feel like, yeah.
Hey, I'll be covering that on my vlog sometime this week anyway, so whatever.
Sounds good. All right. You want to plug anything other than your vlog? Yeah, you're going to send me a YouTube link. We're good.
I have a vlog, Shoot Your Aggressors, all that.
Okay. Sounds good. Maybe not the word I want to use. Interesting. You can follow me on Twitter at JeremiahJM. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. We may not be back next week, but I hope to be. I have one last family Christmas weekend that I am doing. I know it's many a month too late, but it's over the whole weekend, so I might be back. I might not. Otherwise, we'll put out another episode in 2 weeks. I appreciate y'all. Hope you have a great week or two. Peace.
Be well.